This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, an update on Iraq. Hello again, I'm Carol Castillo. Before we get into our topic, because of the coronavirus and need for social distancing in the United States, my VOA current affairs team has been asked to telework, that is, work from home, more frequently, which may prevent us from providing you, our dear listeners, with fresh Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News programs on a weekly basis. We will be doing more interviews by phone, and that may reduce audio quality. We may also have to run encore programs from time to time. Nonetheless, we want you to know that despite the difficult days ahead and technical shortcomings, my colleagues Kim Lewis, Rick Pantaleo, and I will work hard every day to bring you our three news analysis programs to the best of our ability, and we thank you for your understanding. Now to our Encounter topic, Iraq. We will be looking at the ongoing consequences of the U.S. targeted assassination in January of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani playing out on Iraqi soil, the state of Iraqi politics in light of Iraqi President Barham Saleh's nomination of Shia politician Adnan al-Zurfi to be the country's next candidate for prime minister, and the impact the coronavirus is having in that fragile country. Lethal attacks on U.S. troops by Iran-backed Iraqi militias during the month of March demonstrate that Iran continues to retaliate for the January 3rd U.S. killing of top Iranian commander Qasem Soleimani. According to Michael Knights, an analyst with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, early on March 13, U.S. and British aircraft conducted multiple airstrikes on the missile storage sites of the Iraqi militia group Kataib Hezbollah, a pro-Iranian group that was also hit by unclaimed airstrikes in Syria the day before, until earlier that week when a rocket attack killed two Americans and one British service member at Camp Taji base in Baghdad. There hadn't been much noise from Tehran since its reprisal in early January after the assassination of Qasem Soleimani. So contrary to the Trump administration's allegations that his assassination would deter terrorist attacks, Iran has in fact shown its determination through its proxies to exact revenge. The renewal of hostilities playing out on Iraqi soil has increased tensions between the United States and Iraq, which has been unable to form a permanent government amid deadlock between pro-Iranian factions seeking to expel U.S. troops from Iraq, and Sunni and Kurdish leaders seeking to preserve an American presence. Well, joining us by phone to analyze the current state of play in Iraq against the backdrop of the COVID-19 spread are two distinguished regional analysts. Sarhang Hamasaid is Director of Middle East Programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and Randa Slim is Director of the Conflict Resolution and Track 2 Dialogues Program at the Middle East Institute. Sarhang Hamasaid, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol. Good to be back.
And Randa Slim, welcome to you.
Thank you, Carol. Good to be with you both.
Well, let me begin with Sarhang Hamasaid. What is your take, Sarhang, on this tit-for-tat missile strikes between the United States and Iranian-backed Iraqi militias in the backdrop of this delicate political state of play in Iraq, now that President Barham Saleh has gone ahead and nominated the Shia politician Adnan al-Zurfi to be the country's next candidate for prime minister?
Well, what is happening is within what both sides, the United States and Iran, have always declared that they would do. Iran had always declared that they want the United States' influence in the Middle East reduced and they want U.S. troops out. And the presence of U.S. troops in Iraq, especially now that the military defeat of ISIS has been declared, for them, it's a threat. They want to push the U.S. out. And what aggravated matters, the killing of General Qasem Soleimani in January and deputy commander of the Popular Mobilization Forces with strong affiliations with Iran, Abu Mahdi Mohandes, being killed on Iraqi territories, it just aggravated that to be more. And the U.S., on the other side, had always declared that should there be casualties among U.S. personnel, the U.S. would take action and defend itself. And we have seen now tit for tat, and bad side of this is that this is happening on Iraqi territories, something that the Iraqi people and the Iraqi leaders have always wanted to avoid, not having their country to become the battleground for direct or indirect U.S. and Iran competition and attacks. And the designation of a member of parliament, Adnan al-Zurfi, now to become the prime minister designate comes in a very difficult time when this tit-for-tat is happening between the United States and Iran, and at the moment where Iraq's relationship with the United States also strained over these attacks and other matters. And there's also disagreement among the Shia about who they want to be prime minister, and the Shia public mostly dissatisfied with the status quo of the political class and the previous prime ministers. They have been objecting the current nominee and others. So Iraq right now is in the middle of a very complex situation that has to do with U.S. and Iran and the COVID-19 that you referred to in your remarks and this complex political situation.
Let me turn now to Randa Salim for your take on the current situation. Randa, anything to add or subtract to what Sarhang said?
I agree with most of, in fact, all of what Sarhang said. I think Iraq now has been hit by a perfect storm. On one hand, you have a coronavirus pandemic, which has hit Iraq. So far, 154 people are registered by the Ministry of Health to be infected, with about 12 deaths. So you have the COVID-19 pandemic on one hand, for which, in fact, the Iraqi healthcare system is really not equipped to handle due to decades of mismanagement and corruption and due to the flight of capable medical personnel over the last decades from Iraq. So that's one. You have tumbling oil prices because an oil price war that's taking place now between Russia and Saudi Arabia, which will have huge and long-term impact on the Iraqi economy. 90% of the revenues in the Iraqi budget depends on their oil exports. To give you an example, the 2020 Iraqi budget was put together on the assumption that barrel of oil is at $56. Today, it's selling for less than $25. So if this low price is sustained, Iraq cannot pay public sector salaries in the future, cannot keep its power plants running, and cannot finance a lot of development projects in education, healthcare, and other services. The third is something that Sarhang refers to and you talked about in your intro, which is this tit-for-tat, which is going on between the United States and Iran-backed Iraqi militias, and which do not seem to have reached an end. And we are likely to see more of that going forward. And then you have this political paralysis, which Sarhang talked about. There is now a new PM designate, Mr. Adnan Al-Zurfi, who, by the way, is a dual United States and Iraqi national. Now, if he were to assume the post, he has to give up his U.S. citizenship, according to Iraqi law. Anyway, he's known to be an efficient manager. He used to be twice governor of the province of Najaf. So he is now member of the parliament. So he is known to have good managerial skills. However, we already have heard from a number of Iraqi parties, especially those that are affiliated with Iran, like the Fatah bloc, which is the second largest parliamentary bloc in the Iraqi parliament, basically voicing their opposition to the process by which Mr. Al-Zurfi was nominated, with Mr. Barham Saleh, the Iraqi president, nominating him, but also voicing their opposition to him as prime minister designate because of this perception within that camp inside Iraq of him being pro-U.S.
Well, thank you both for setting the scene for us. Back to you, Sarhang Hamasaid. With respect to the tit-for-tat and the political paralysis, how can the United States respond to these provocations without derailing what could be seen as a potentially positive development? So I've made some assumptions there. Do you see the nomination of Al-Zurfi as relatively positive? And do you think that he can bring the factions together? And can the United States hold back in terms of the tit-for-tat going forward?
What we are witnessing today is primarily because the government of Iraq has not been able to rein in armed groups that have been staging these attacks. And that has been a primary criticism from the United States towards the government of Iraq. It has been a primary criticism from political actors in Iraq and from Iraqi citizens. So that's the core of the issue, the Iraqi state being unable to control those actors and prevent those attacks. And the degree of control varied under different prime ministers. So the current caretaker prime minister may be considered the weakest in terms of his ability to rein in those armed groups. But similar criticism existed under the former Prime Minister, Dr. Abadi. So unless the government of Iraq is strengthened and the Prime Minister and the institutions of the state are able to exercise their prevention of such attacks, and when they happen, they bring perpetrators to justice, as long as the U.S. is present on the ground, it will be forced to defend itself and its personnel and respond to attacks that happen. And that's exactly what some of these actors and Iran want, is to pull the U.S. into that confrontation so that they use that as excuse to push the U.S. out through the avenues of control that they have, whether the parliament or through security forces. The other is that it serves Iran and those groups to take attention away from the mass demonstrations that were happening for the past 5 months, that they are demanding to end the influence of Iran. They are demanding reforms in the government, fighting corruption and better elections, early elections. So for now, I think the best the U.S. can do is try to minimize those tit for tats where possible and continue to help and work with the political process to have a prime minister that can push the political process forward. And it's only partially about the person who becomes the prime minister, because Iraq has a political class problem, not a prime minister problem. And the political class, they have diverging interests, and they have an interest first in keeping the status quo, which the people do not like. They owe to regional countries like Iran, and that gives those countries influence, and that often works against the interests of the United States and the Iraqi people. So there is a difficult situation that requires careful management. That's why early elections is an important factor. If the election is based on a good law that allows more neutral actors to come into the political space and represent Iraqi interests and for real try to prevent Iraq from being the battleground for staging attacks against the United States or others in the country, that is the more long-term bet. Strengthening that institutions of the state through better elections, better candidates, higher political participation from the people, and this requires the international community to be really engaged in the entire chain of the electoral process to have the confidence of the people to participate. That's the longer game.
Back to you, Adanda. Sarhang referred to the protests we know that started last year, widespread protests by many communities, predominantly the Shia community, protesting against corruption, monopoly over power, and the lack of interest in sharing greater power. Your take on what this prime minister could do if he's ratified Adnan al-Zurfi? Is he a unifier? And what is the balance of power between these two factions, those parliamentarians who back Iran and those who would like to maintain good relations with the United States and at the same time not antagonize, obviously, its important neighbor, Iran?
As soon as he was officially nominated, Mr. al-Zurfi posted on his Facebook account a message which included a series of promises and pledges. One of these pledges is to conduct early elections within a year's time. And a second pledge is to respond to the protesters' demands. A third pledge is to guarantee the sovereignty of Iraq and to try to bring all weapons under the control of the state. I mean, we have heard this from previous prime minister as well as the last nominee who failed to gain confidence of the parliament. And so, as Sarhang said, the protest movement now is about 6 months old. You know, it started in October. And what's happening, as you mentioned, primarily in Shiite majority areas, and it was most of the protest activists, if not the great majority of them, are religiously devout Shia. And despite that, we have not seen division within the political class. And usually in countries like Iraq or like Lebanon or somewhere else where you have a political class that has interest on preserving the status quo, the political system as it is, in the way they have divided the spoils of the system among themselves and how to preserve their respective shares in the system through their patronage networks or through their access to different ministries' budgets or through the employment opportunities that control of certain ministries provide to each of these different political parties. So what we have seen in Iraq is that despite these 6 months of protests, despite quite a wide level of support from the Iraqi population writ large for the demands of the protesters, which are demanding for less corruption, better management, better services, which is expected of every citizen to demand of their government. We have not seen this political elite, this ruling class, divided. And by remaining united, there had not been as many opportunities as we could see if they were divided for the protesters to mine these divisions and to create spaces for them to be able to contest the political space or to create opportunities for them to contest the political space. We have not seen that happen, and they remain united around the preservation of the status quo. And so going forward, if this prime minister, who is a product of the status quo after all, he might come with all these lofty pledges, but he still is a product of the post-2003 status quo. And also he shares the interest of the ruling class of preserving the status quo. So at some point he's going to clash with the protesters who have been demanding an overhaul of the status quo, total change of the rules of the game that have been put in place after 2003 by the United States and eventually by every Iraqi government that was put in place after that. And so it's going to be hard for him, on one hand, to win the trust of the protesters, and on the other hand, it's going to be, in my opinion, difficult for him to try to change or to carry this mission of changing a status quo of which he is a product. That's assuming he's able to win the confidence of parliament.
Exactly.
One thing going for him is that right now there seem to be more groups for his candidacy than less. I think Mr. Az-Zurfi, from what we have heard so far in terms of reaction to the nomination, is that you have some groups within the Shia community opposed to him, especially the pro-Iran group, but also you have other groups within the Shia community and the Shia political elites who are supporting him. You have the Sunnis, many of whom are supporting him, and you have at least so far half of the Kurds are supporting him, and more probably most of the Kurds will support him if he were to agree with them on their share of the ministries and the budget going forward, depending on the negotiation. And so he might have a better chance going forward, given the alliance that right now has come together to support him. But still, he has a very tough job ahead of him, and it's going to be very hard for the protesters to accept it.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Sarhang Hamasaid, he's Director of Middle East Programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and Rhonda Sleem. She's director of the Conflict Resolution and Track 2 Dialogues Program at the Middle East Institute. We're discussing the state of play in the very important nation of Iraq, which has great implications for the region and the world. And both panelists joined me by phone in keeping with our new regulations to stop the spread of the coronavirus. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. And you may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a shout out to our very loyal listener, Nelson Azuma from Ghana. And we just want to advise you as well that we will be giving you updates, communicating with you via Facebook and Twitter to supplement our broadcasts. So back to our guests as we conclude the program. And Sarhang Hamasaid, we're going to talk about Iran and then the U.S. Quickly, Iran. What does Iran want? I mean, it is overwhelmed by the coronavirus, by COVID-19. They are worrying about the sanctions, which are preventing them from getting dire medical equipment and treatment. Yet they are still backing these militias in Iraq, trying to hit the U.S. for its assassination of Qasem Soleimani and trying to get the U.S. to depart. What are they trying to achieve, and can they do it?
Right. Well, I think that's the trillion-dollar question. What does Iran want? But I think as far as we can know quickly from just what they articulated, they want the U.S. out of the Middle East in terms of military power and less influence. Obviously, harder to achieve than reality that they're dealing with. Second, they want to preserve the advances they have made in Iraq and Syria and Lebanon and in Yemen. And third, they want to wait out until after the elections to see if they can have a different conversation with the United States. However, the economic pressure they're under in, the implications of COVID-19 may change that course. We do not know. So far, these attacks, they continue to signal that they are not giving up.
Okay, and one more question, then I'll let Rhonda conclude. What would you recommend, Sarhang, that the United States do to stabilize and improve relations with Iraq? After all, the relationship is critical. U.S. troops have been there to aid in the fight against the remnants of the so-called Islamic State, which still has sleeper cells and the ideology continues to attract followers. So notwithstanding the defeat of the territory, we're still in that fight. Also keeping Iran at bay. I mean, what would you recommend that the United States do?
Yeah, my recommendation for the United States and all the friends of Iraq is that they work together with one voice, so the European allies and others, because what is good for Iraq, there's a common interest with the interest of the Iraqi people and the United States and the friends of Iraq. And speaking with one voice for the political class to take this moment seriously, that they have serious political, economic, social, and security issues that they need to resolve, so that the international community does not have to go and bail out Iraq in terms of fighting another terrorist group or another round of violence and displacement and all of that. So speaking with one voice with Iraq is important. Second, I would recommend that do not adopt a mindset of forcing Iraq an either-or. If you force Iraq to say, okay, you either choose the United States or Iran, they cannot make that choice. Iran is their neighbor. Their influence on the ground is real. I think helping Iraq to set itself free from the malign influence is the way to go. And that's why elections is a central piece to that. And working with the United Nations to do that is key. Harnessing this positive energy among the Iraqi youth, which represents the biggest transformation in the Iraqi society since 2003, are the things to focus on.
And Randa Slim, you get the last word.
Look, I think in terms of Iran, I think their main objective has always been, since Saddam Hussein was removed by the U.S. invasion of Iraq, is that they want to make sure that Iraq will never represent a source of threat to Iran. Saddam Hussein was that threat, had an 8-year war with Iran. And so his removal by the U.S. occupation created an opportunity for Iran to carve for itself a big role in Iraqi politics. And more importantly, what Iran has been doing since the ISIS war in 2014 is to work with these militias known as the Popular Mobilization Forces, who played a very important role in fighting ISIS. We cannot discount that. But there is a problem with a group of them which are extremely loyal to Iran and which are controlled pretty much by Iran. And there are some of these groups that are conducting these attacks on Iraqi bases, hosting U.S. coalition forces and NATO. There have been 25 rocket strikes on Iraqi bases as well near the U.S. embassy in the Green Zone in Iraq since last October. Some of these strikes predate Soleimani's killing in January of this year. And so this has been part of a strategy by Iran, as Sarhang said, to drive the U.S. out, but more importantly is also to create the score within the Popular Mobilization Forces that are nominally under the control of the Iraqi Defense Ministry, but they are really not beholden to the office of the Prime Minister, and they are totally controlled or under decision-making of Iran. And they want to maintain this as an independent force inside Iraq to make sure that there will be no governments in the future in Iraq that will make ever a decision to go to war against Iran or to be a source of threat to Iran. That's the main objective of Iran. What can the U.S. do? I think I agree with most of what Sarhang said. I think it's very important for us to capitalize on the future of Iraq. And these youth, these protesters, are the future of Iraq. And so the more we can work with them, the last thing we should do is to make them seen as being pro-U.S. actors or being U.S. allies. They are Iraqi protesters who are there to shape the future of their country. They need to be a neighbor to Iran. Geography, after all, dictates facts. And then they need also not to be beholden to Iranian interests, that there are Iraqi interests which sometimes diverge from Iranian interests. And most importantly, what the U.S. needs to do going forward is to look at Iraq through the Iraqi lens. Until now, our policy vis-a-vis Iraq, especially under this administration, has been through the maximum pressure lens, through an Iran lens. We have not had a policy that really about U.S.-Iraq relations and that is defined and shaped in dialogue by Iraqis and by Americans. It's more about how can we deal with Iraq or how can we work with Iraq and how can Iraq work with us to defeat Iran and to put more maximum pressure on Iran.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have. I'd like to thank my guests, Sarhang Hamasaid, Director of Middle East Programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and Randa Slim, Director of the Conflict Resolution and Track 2 Dialogues Program at the Washington-based Middle East Institute. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me by phone.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Randa. To be with you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Joe Gill, and I'm Carol Castiel. thanking you once again for tuning in and for understanding our programming limitations due to coronavirus. Coming up on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA with host Rick Pantaleo is a special episode about the coronavirus and COVID-19 with former director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Thomas Frieden. Meantime, listeners, please take care, stay safe and healthy, and if you have access to the internet, please check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA, and our Twitter feed at CarolCastielVOA for alerts and program updates. And join us again next week for another encounter on The Voice of America.